start. Sooners of Oklahoma at 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
What is going on, Sooner Nation? Thank you all for tuning into another episode of the Barry and Mac Show. As always, myself, Barry, personal trainer, sports performance coach out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and alongside me, former Sooner wide receiver, 2000 national champ, Mr. Damian Mackey. How are we doing today, D-Mac?
Happy New Year, B. Doing well. Man, we got a lot to discuss today. Just saw that game the other night. What was that, Thursday night. We a lot of good, a lot of bad, and some ugly. But Happy New Year's to you. Happy New Year's to the Sooner Nation. Salute to the Barry and Mac community. Appreciate you guys for everything you guys done. Looking forward to 2024. Got some things in the works. By the way, salute B, still collecting checks. I appreciate that, getting collecting checks, doing the things we love. It's never did you get your check the other day? I got a check the other day.
So it's nice
having a good time and chopping it up with my brother.
Yes sir, got a lot to talk about today, but want to remind everybody, go check out the Twitter at Barry and Mac SHW. Follow DMac at D_Mac13. Follow me at B-Wise Fitness, at letter B, W-I-S-E Fitness. And over on Instagram, Damian is at Dame That Dude. And you can find me, same thing, at B-Wise Fitness. But getting into the Alamo Bowl, Sooners catch a loss, D-Mac, 38-24 to the Arizona Wildcats. Going into this game, Oklahoma fans seemed fairly tempered. This was the first game of the year where I saw probably about a 50-50 split, predicting a win, predicting a loss. There was a lot of folks with losing Dylan Gabriel, a senior leader, a player who does the little things, and we'll talk about that later on in the show, who does the little things well. I think we've kind of beat that horse ad nauseum throughout this year. But you had a game where there were spots that Oklahoma looked really, really good, and you can see the future and the potential of some of the prospects. Then there were other spots, as you mentioned, that were just downright ugly, especially towards the end of the game. Some of the turnovers, which were not committed by youngsters. You did have a couple, especially early, that put OU kind of in a bad spot to open the game, and they were digging themselves out of the hole, but they dug themselves out of the hole. But seniors making mistakes, not protecting the football, and that's what you end up with. I want to go over a little bit of the stats here, just to get a clearer picture of what this game was. So you had OU out first down Arizona 23-16. You had OU outgain Arizona 562 to 383 in the total yard department. Passing yards were about the same. Again, we will discuss Jackson Arnold's debut. OU dominated the game in the run defense. Arizona had 26 rushing yards to finish the game. OU did their job filling lanes. You had guys at linebacker. I thought Kip Lewis in pass coverage, he struggled at times, but against the run, he was solid. Danny Stutzman had a few just highlight plays, things that I think next year in the SEC, he's going to get even more accolades for, doing essentially the same thing. Time of possession, Arizona is able to close out the game. They had a 95-yard drive that sort of sealed the game going away, and that's where Sooner Nation, I think, started packing it in. But let's discuss some of the positives, D-Mac. You watched the game. Don't know if you've hit the rewatch yet, but I'm told me you watched it pretty closely. I want to hear your thoughts offense first, without getting in too many of the weeds. What were some of the general highlights that you took away from it?
I think some of our most talented players are young. I think the most talented receivers left are the younger guys. By the way, notwithstanding Drake, obviously this was his curtain call. I saw Drake catch a ball, and I was like, holy shit, that looks exactly like Bob 20 years ago. Like Drake looks like his daddy now. I mean, I think he looks like his mom too, but he was when he caught a ball, and the guy kind of jumped in his face, and then Drake jumped back in that guy's face. Like,
yes.
Like, you could tell Drake wasn't no punk about his. I was like, that's totally Bob Stoops when I met him, you know, 23 years ago, 24 years ago. But we got talent coming up the ranks. In the skill positions, Sawchuk had some kind of tweak going on where he looked really explosive sometimes, then he looked like he had a torn hamstring other times. I don't know what that was about, but obviously, needless to say, had a solid game. Other things offensively that I thought were pretty good were this is addition by subtraction. I think that's the last time we'll see that rendition of the offense. That offense that we ran and the offense that we've deployed the last 2 years, to me, it's just a JV offense. And I'm not saying in principle it's terrible, but when I watched Ole Miss play yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever it was, that didn't look like Ole Miss. And when I watched the Baylor, go back and watch the Baylor golden years, that didn't look like the Baylor golden years. And it didn't even look like the Josh Heupel, you know, UCF years. So I was happy to hear and get confirmation that that's not Seth's offense. We were running what was left of Lebby's offense. I was happy to see the pup go out there and keep slinging it. I know we'll kind of go into details about that here in a bit, but he went out there and slung it. And I think the worst pick of the night is the one where he assumes the backer can't get up 13. In fact, I think it was can't get in and get underneath that seam route he's trying to hit, or kind of that in cut. And that guy went and mitted it. But aside from that, he's a tick late. Recognition's a little off. I liked seeing him go through adversity and keep chunking the ball. And then I think his athleticism, his moxie. I think you learn a lot. You learn more in losing than you do in winning. And so in a game that really didn't matter, went to the tune of two seniors coming back just to say, hey, man, I want to make sure the pup doesn't get creamed. You know, I think it's good that, like you said, the offense went out and put up 500 yards in a game against a quality opponent who ended up as a 10-win team, who they had dudes. They you know.
Oh, for sure.
Pac-10 style, but those guys have guys who could play, especially on offense. For me, contextually speaking, a lot to like. Obviously, I wanted to win the game. Obviously, the O-line was an abomination. But I will talk philosophically about some strategic stuff in the second half that I think we could have won the game easily. And I'm not even talking about Farouk and his the things he did. I'm talking about if based upon how the game played out, we could have won if philosophically we made one tweak. So I'll get into that in a bit, though.
Let's go over to the defense. You know, they give up 38 points, but quite a few of those points came off of turnovers. The touchdown that sort of took the lid off the game, if you will, the deep throw going right to left that Arizona had where a receiver got behind. That one was off of a turnover. They still allow 26 rushing yards, you know, about 350 through the air. And there were moments in the game where it felt like the defense had pretty good control of what was going on. There was a stretch there between the second, I want to say right at the very end of the first quarter into kind of late third, where OU's defense felt like they were controlling the game. They had dialed in on how to defend for a little bit. They had some momentum going. They were getting home. Watching Kendall Dolby work that left tackle was stuff that I think bodes well for them going into the SEC next year. That was really, really good to see, in my opinion. A guy who struggled towards the back half of the season, but seems like he might have picked up a few things in bowl practice, might have dialed in some of the assignment stuff, because I thought overall that was one of his better games. I thought 15 did a pretty good job. But talk about the defense. What were some of the positives there, things that Sooner fans can take into the first year of the SEC with a little bit of hope?
Yeah, I think we are pretty well solidified on the second level with depth. I don't know if people saw, but like, Deson was playing true linebacker. There were plays where Deson and Dolby were in at the same time. I think that's a plus. I think that's a position for him. Like you said, Kip and Stutz, you know, obviously primarily manning the second level. I saw Kanick in there, and there wasn't any egregious bad plays by Kanick even when he was playing backer. Along the D line on RMT, had a couple flash plays.
Finally looking good.
Yeah, coming off that weak side edge. At the defensive tackle position, obviously Terry and the Notre Dame kid coming back are going to be helpful to provide some quality depth. But I know you asked for positives, but I will say the big negative for me on defense is our guys still haven't comprehended BV's zone at the second and third level. Our guys don't know how to engage the windows that are anticipated, and it's something that comes with time and reps. And I mean, it shouldn't take 2 years. Some of those guys have been around 2 years, but we're missing and or are late to windows in the zone, and we leave guys wide open. And so I hope as we transition to the SEC, we do some of what the big boys in the SEC do and Texas does as well, which is when all is in doubt, play man. Maybe leave one or two free safeties, but don't give the quarterback any pre-snap easy reads and hope and expect your defensive line to get pressure. We had enough pressure with our D-line. By the way, our D-line was collapsing the pocket consistently second and third quarter. To your statement, it was the entire second quarter and the third quarter up until Farouk's fumble. We dominated their offense. We went from down 13 to up, I believe, 12 or 13. And then after the fumble, they scored like 21 unanswered and put the game away. But we have to level up. I think it's just trust at this point. I think we have good enough. I think we roll into the SEC. So I don't want to spend a ton of time on Arizona. We'll talk about the game too. But I think today we have enough talent on the defensive side and in the secondary to line up against everybody in the SEC, even Bama and Georgia, assuming we're 100% healthy, and say you got to out-athlete us, right? 26 played well. Can I?
He did.
He had some good plays, even over and beyond the interception. Kid played well. Peyton was lost in space a little bit, but I didn't even really understand his position. I know we were in the 30 front, and so we had an additional back end player because that provides an additional.
I was going to ask you about that. Him and Reggie played a lot with Bowman. Was he just playing like a true nickel? Is that what that was? Or
I got to go back and watch it. At first I thought he was playing cheetah, but then I was like, nah, there goes Dolby. Right. And so I know in the old days, BV had two separate six DB packages. One was called obviously dime, and then the other was called six pack. And in the six pack role, Roy was truly a linebacker. Roy had linebacker responsibilities, whereas in dime, Roy was the sixth DB, which he had different responsibilities. So I got to go back and look, but it was definitely personnel we had not run all year. And so I'll go back and peruse that because I'm like, yo, what is, you know, at first I thought he was the cheetah, you know, kind of the nickel backer who's flexible enough to do both, but Dobie's on the field too. So I got to go back and rehash that piece. Peyton's good enough to going into the fall, be a guy who can be counted on. And I look forward to seeing that. I heard about the rumors with Woody and if he's coming back or maybe being asked to, you know, go to the NFL or whatever. Woody's a team guy. If he comes back, I wouldn't have an issue with it. But I think we've got talent that can go out there and play like Woody plays. So for me, the bigger thing, Barry, is watching the game. You looked at the numbers. We outgained them over almost 200 yards. We outrushed them over 180 yards. And we had 6 turnovers to 1. And a lot of those turnovers were at our own fault. Right? Mm. I mean, I like Farouk, but if he doesn't play, we probably win the game. That's a harsh way to say it. That sounds pretty shitty. I know what I'm saying, but like, man, dude, people don't forget. People don't remember. Second quarter, We're going in to score a touchdown, and he makes a good play, and he cuts up, and then boom, 13 punches the ball out at about the 12-yard line, which is a possession where otherwise we can assume we score at least 3, but obviously we take 7 off the board, and then, of course, the critical play, we're up 2 scores, we're getting ready to go up 3 scores. They've already basically kind of quit. If we score in that possession, like, they don't even make an attempt.
Game's over.
They put out the white flags. You're going into the fourth quarter, you're up 3 scores. Perfectly thrown ball I mean, I'm glad they didn't give that to Jackson. That is a fumble. And obviously the kid takes it back for a fumble, scoop and score for a touchdown. Boom. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a ball game. So is what it is. I feel good about most position groups. We'll probably talk about position groups. And when we talk about the one everyone's talking about, the offensive line is a issue. It's a big issue. By the way, they looked untalented. Holy freaking moly. I was like, yo, this does not look good. So, you know, that'll be my biggest concern heading into the SEC.
Yeah, let's talk about Jackson real quick. You know, he came into the game, obviously a ballyhooed recruit, five-star. We were very, very high on him. In my opinion, even after that game, I know some people see the interceptions. To me, a lot of those were just lack of reps and understanding the speed of the game. The interception by the backer, the first fumble by Farouk, Jackson completes basically the same ball where he's able to fit it inside the backer between the corners playing like that outside, the safety's over the top. He gets it into Farouk and the backer is not able to get there. The difference was that backer probably saw formation down a distance and knew that he could bait him into that throw to some degree. And that time he was able to get underneath it. And to me at that point, the game was not getting out of hand, but it was a point where OU was really, really struggling to get their footing. But a few things that I loved from his game, and I want to get your take.
Yep.
He sits in the pocket, man. He probably held on to the ball a little bit too long in some degree.
Yep.
But Baker did the same damn thing. Baker would hold on to that ball. He'd tap that bad boy. He'd keep those eyes downfield. I love his ability to stand in the pocket strong. There were multiple throws where a freshman, probably a freshman with less talent and less moxie, gets rid of the ball sooner. He stood in that pocket and waited for things to develop and took the hit. Another thing that I love, there's a play, I want to say it's either second or third down. They're probably at Arizona's 35. The pocket is collapsing. His vision, and I posted this play on X. You guys can go check it out. He's not even looking at what is going on with the left tackle. He has pressure coming. He feels it. He doesn't put his eyes over there. He feels it. He probably sees it in the periphery, and he takes off. He steps up. He doesn't hesitate. He takes off, gets a big gainer, and helped OU get down into the red zone. That, to me, was the type of stuff that a championship quarterback, a quarterback that can get into the college football playoff and help you compete, that's what they do. A lot of his interceptions felt like plays where you just need more reps. You know, the first one to Drake where he doesn't see that safety. In high school, the safety's not fast enough to get over there. In high school, you complete that ball. In college, it's a little bit different situation. That safety's probably running a 4-4, and he's able to get over there, get the interception, and he just doesn't anticipate how fast and how quickly that ball needs to get home. I love his balance. I think he has Baker-level balance when it comes to handling the rush, being able to evade the rush and not lose his feet. There were multiple times where I thought he was down for sure. He's able to, again, stand in the pocket. Things that actually make the offensive line, there were probably 4 to 5 sacks that did not happen. That if DG was playing, they probably do. If DG is playing with that same offensive line, and that's not negating DG's ability, maybe he figures out a different way, maybe they're doing something else. But if he is hit with that same contact, it is likely a sack. So just my overall point, what was your take on his performance, D-Mac? Well, how do you think this bodes going into next year?
I think it bodes well. So let's talk about a few things strategically first. Number one, it was very clear to me by the third quarter that we had a condensed playbook. Jackson had maybe 8 or 9 throwing concepts to choose from. We didn't have a running back screen. I mean, I don't know what we had. But what I do know is we only showed about 8 or 9 passing concepts. Number two, although Jackson is a RPO, he comes from an RPO background at his high school, he proved on Thursday night or whatever night that was that that's not the only thing he can run. He's not a system quarterback. Jackson's going to do well whether or not we run fun and gun, you know, we run leech style. He'll do well turning around and handing the ball off and running a ton of action off of what he runs. And so the diversity in which his skills translate is also very attractive. The ball pops off his hand. That's very attractive. He didn't underthrow deep balls. That's attractive. Did you see the nose of the ball? It went up and then it came down. Yep. That's very attractive. The ball turns over. That means he has the arm strength, right, to stay on top of the ball, which means that's more – when your quarterback can stay on top of the ball, that's a longer distance they have pinpoint accuracy. Right. And so that that's a big deal. It's a big deal. If a quarterback has to shoulder the ball, right? We talked about Dylan throwing from the hip. He throws the ball up and the receiver has to adjust to it. He just has to run to the football. But if you can stay on top of the ball, you have pinpoint accuracy at a longer clip. Obviously, he's more explosive when he runs the ball. Obviously, a bigger, stronger kid. Kid's 18, 19 years old and did not look undersized in the game, whereas DG's a grown man and has the grown man girth, but is still he's not a better athlete than anybody on the second level of most teams we play. Talking about DG. Jackson Arnold can run away from some backers. Jackson Arnold will be too big for some corners to deal with on an island when he's a sophomore and a junior and he's 6'2½", 213 pounds with more girth. It's not going to be a corner feeling really comfortable trying to make that tackle. And then, like I said earlier, kid made some bad throws. By the way, let's talk about the interceptions. High school football, there is no defense where you go from a 2 to a 3 or a 1, whatever they were going to. I don't know if it was man or zone. I got to go back and look. Where there's a robber who knows the windows to rob, right? Even if a high school calls robber, the DB's just replacing. He's not necessarily jumping, right? Phenomenal play by that safety. I have no fault to Drake because as a receiver, Drake feels it and slows down expecting the ball to be put on him, which is what a experienced quarterback would do. That turns more into like a hitch than it does a slant. If the inside receiver feels their safety trying to replace and come into that hole, you stop and you put the ball on him. Again, that's like 2 weeks of practice. That's not going to be a difficult thing for Jackson to recognize. And then the second one on kind of the outside wheel type play where, again, it's Drake and the guy mosses Drake, poor Drake, right? Again, it's just late or it's just a flatter throw. Either he can throw it at the point in which he anticipated it and puts it more on a line. The beauty is Dylan could never make that throw on a line. Jackson can. Or he anticipates it and throws it a tick quicker, and then the safety can't get there, and Drake's catching it 1 foot in, 1 foot out. So those two interceptions are not a big deal. Even on the third one, where the backer makes an exceptional play. What I fault Jackson on is assuming his arm talent is better than D1 athletes. I think on that play, he's just not accustomed to a second level defender being 6'1", but probably jumping 30, 35 inches, right, with a vertical and have a longer arms. He's a better athlete. That guy simply makes a play a high school kid can't make. And so I see that play and you know, when he throws, I'm like, oh, but you see quarterbacks all the time fit a ball over a backer. He puts it on the line, kid mitts it. I'm excited. You know what I think about? You know, correlation and people are, you know, whatever. This might be hyperbole or exaggeration. What's the kid from Ohio State who's a rookie in the NFL? What's his name?
Stroud. Stroud. Yeah, CJ Stroud.
He reminds me of Stroud. Stroud is unapologetically saying, screw y'all and y'all tenure and all this NFL blah, blah, blah. I'm playing football. And if Farouk doesn't fumble twice, I think that's a message. I think the narrative, if Farouk doesn't have two fumbles, is simply that Dylan didn't play great, but you saw the moxie and the excellent ceiling of Jackson. Regardless, even with the third interception and the first interception. Right. I think we keep those. But OU wins and everybody's talking about Dylan had two TD passes and two or three. He doesn't need three interceptions at that point. Right. He has two interceptions, two TDs, 300 yards. But look at all the throws he kept making. And so when I look at Jackson Arnold, and obviously, you know, I can be transparent. I am further confirming my thoughts. There is a bias there, but man, even with the loss, you see the ceiling. It's not even fun to talk about relative to him versus Dylan Gabriel. There's no relativity there. One kid has to be perfect in order for the offense to be elite or very good. The other kid, right, has the potential to, on any given drive, to make every throw. And defenses and defensive coordinators are going to know that going into the SEC.
Yeah, well, one of the things that stood out that I predicted would stand out, that was the best yak we saw from the quick game all year. Multiple receivers catching the ball right when they're getting out of their cuts. Anderson, Tawi, the little wheel route he throws to Tawi to pick up the first down, where it's basically on Tawi's hip before he even turns around. That was a phenomenal anticipatory throw, and that's what you've got to have if you want to go out and beat teams that can play high-level defense. Again, felt like reps. I talked to quite a few football kind of guys, kind of old heads who coached the high school game, and they said that offense, kind of as you stated, it was incredibly scaled back. There was not a whole lot for Jackson to even work with. There wasn't a lot of wrinkles or counters to what Arizona was doing. They were basically playing straight up. But one of the issues that felt like it really impacted OU's ability to control the game, not necessarily get the lead, but to control the game, was the offensive line. So the 200 yards, and I said this online, it needs a little bit of context. There's a 62-yard run by Sawchuk, which you can't take this out, but I'm just saying from a percentage of what plays were successful versus weren't and how a coach is likely going to view the game on a play-to-play basis. You had a 62-yard run, an 18-yard touchdown, and you had a 15-yard run that made up kind of the bulk of the yards. You take out those three plays, OU averaged about 3.75 yards on the ground and did not look consistent. Right, as you said, it felt like multiple plays, especially a right tackle. There's a play where that defensive end just jumps the snap, and he's behind. I want to say it was Sexton at the time, and he had no chance, no shot. And that guy at Arizona, it's not a knock, but he is not the level of talent they're going to play in the SEC with Alabama and LSU and Texas again, the guys they're going to be lining up with. It is a different animal. It felt like the athleticism just was not quite there. And I know they're missing guys, but this is the guy who's playing next year. These are the players. Other than freshmen or transfer portal guys, these are the guys. So talk a little bit about the offensive line, D-Mac. What can OU do? What do they need to do? Is it as bad as at times it appeared? Was it just because guys hit the portal, or is there a real issue there in terms of depth, recruiting, and development?
Yeah, so your O-line is the one position group where your prior 3 years have a huge impact. And you know, prior to this last class, I think we got four in 22. Mistake, correct me if I'm wrong. We've been averaging two and three and tons of busts the years prior. That is a 100% developmental and recruiting issue that Coach Bienbo has to own. He has to own that. Your own, like, he's been here since Link's been here. Like he's been here since Bob's been here. So of the position groups where philosophies change and strategies change, Bill is one of the guys who he stayed through both regimes. These are his dudes. He's cooking with his ingredients. And listen, I know there were some cultural issues between Bird and Bienbo, but you got to figure that shit out. Bird's been in the program 3-4 years. Bird's a guy you need to his fourth and fifth year level up and become a dude, because Bird's a guy who's going to get a cup of coffee in the NFL minimum.
For
the
sure.
Kid has too many tools, and you can't just let a Bird walk out of your program. I'm not going to, you know, belabor about Green. We all know there was some behind the door things going on there. I think it's pretty easy to see and say that there was tampering happening there. And I get it. The, this part of the game, the NIL component and the money, you're talking about a legacy building money some of these kids are getting. That's going to shake up character. People with low character, or maybe just OU's not in the ballpark, or people wouldn't pay more. It's kind of an economics deal. I'm not going to so much hate on that, but gosh dang it, Green at left guard last night or on Thursday, I got to tell you, makes a huge difference, right? If Green's at left guard, then whoever's playing guard is on the bench, or right, we don't have to shuffle as many pieces. That really helps us out. But there's an issue in the O-line recruiting. There's an issue in O-line development. There's an issue in O-line culture. There's an issue there. And, I am not a beat and bow hater. I know a lot of people who are, you know what I'm saying? I do know some individuals we are partners with in business who do not like him in the least. But he needs to get a dose of reality and say, hey, dude, like OU is as good as the quarterbacks quarterbacking us. Right, like Dylan, I think maxed out and got us to a 10-win season, and I respect that. I respect Levy. Like, those guys did what they came to do. You know, Jackson's a guy who can go win a championship with. I don't think you can win a championship with Dylan unless you got championship caliber players all over the place in other areas, and we just haven't had that as of recent, right? But O-line, man, listen, go watch the film. Holy fuck, freaking – try not to cuss. We look extremely unathletic. When we lost to Bama and Kyler was the quarterback, they had Quinn Williams. Quinn Williams jumped off the screen. Go watch the game. Our O-line, by the way, was not great that year, but it didn't look as bad as it looked in the Alamo Bowl when it came down to plays where the defense says, I know you're passing. We're going to bring the house. Stop us. In that fourth quarter, I went from, oh, man, this is a good game, to holy shit, this is so bad, in about a possession and a half. We got six holding penalties. We got six holding penalties the last 6 minutes of the game. And by the way, they were legit. There were a couple on them that they didn't call, by the way. Our guys got held a couple times, and salute to the refs for calling a few for us in our advantage. We're not accustomed to feeling that because the Big 12 just doesn't call.
That was a little different.
Yeah, yep. The Big 12 doesn't call holding for us on defense. But it was bad. Sexton's a guy who, as far as I'm concerned, he's got a lot of development to do in the offseason. I know he's a guy penciled in to be a starter. He hasn't shown that since. He's the guy. Did he get his ACL torn first play of the game against FSU last year?
Was that Sexton or Taylor? I think that was Taylor.
It may have whoever it was. Whoever the case may be. Sexton's
the two
got
Jacobs.
Some, yeah, I know, right? Sexton's got some growing to do. The seniors, I appreciate them for coming back. That meant a lot. Matuire and Rouse, I believe. Those guys won't be here. The beauty is the kid from Great Britain's playing well in the All-Star games. He's out there kicking some ass. Man, 52 on that pick six or the scoop and score fumble. Man, he looks like a bad athlete. I mean, it just doesn't look good. So on the offensive side of the ball, I think we need to go ahead and clean up with another two or three portal guys. Now, and I can't take credit for this. Caleb said it, and I haven't been reading the group chat so much, but who would have known, you know, 3/5 of Michigan starting offensive line are portal guys. Who would have known Ole Miss has literally coined the recruiting strategy, and I think Colorado too, of high school recruiting's cute. We're going to go get guys who we know can make a difference. I think there's something to OU saying, hey, dude, we got to go get two or three more seasoned, experienced guys, because what's in the cupboard right now, it's scary. More than any other position, the D line's getting the two tackles to come back makes things better for us. Plus, we got three dudes coming in.
Yeah,
we got Stone, we've got Nigel. We've got some Jacob, whatever the kids. Like, we got some guys coming. Plus, we kept some experience. Backer is a position I think's loaded. Probably
loaded.
The most talented kids aren't even playing yet. Carter and Samio, and then you got Stutz, who's an All-American, and you got Kip, who he's got another year to grow and develop. Corner is a position where we're long, we're fast. And again, all of those guys who play 10, 20% reps, they're going to get a chance, right? We've got guys who look the part. Receiver, I think we're good. Between the guys we got coming in, plus the kid coming back off the knee, and obviously Anderson and Gibson, who are like those guys, man, they showed me a ton this year. We're good. Running back, we're good, right? I assume he's coming back based upon the fact he left the portal. Obviously, Sawchuk and Hicks, we didn't get to see a ton of Hicks this year, but Hicks is a guy, and then we got the number one running back in the country. We got the number one QB from the 2022 class, plus Hawkins and the other kid. So quarterback makes me feel good. Tight end, we got a number top five tight end in the country coming in. He's a difference maker. It's the offensive line. Coach Venables has to make some hard, not necessarily decisions yet, because I don't think I don't think you do any good firing Beatenbow now, and then potentially losing three or four kids today. But he's got to micromanage that position group and make sure we have the talent in the room. Barry, it was bad, and I haven't watched the game twice.
It was bad. Yeah.
Haven't watched it twice. But the first time I watched it, especially the third and fourth quarter, when we needed the offensive line to give us time to throw, it was bad. I'll say this last thing and I'll pass it back. Yeah. Pisses me off. We're up 13. The play they throw the ball to Farouk that he fumbles, which initially they called an interception. I'm saying to the screen, and I think I'm in the group texting, why aren't we running the football? If we run the football the play before, they're not going to call timeouts in the third quarter. We literally end the quarter and never even have to have the whole scoop and score thing happen in the third quarter. We're running hurry up and throwing the ball. Seth, you're my fullback. I love you to death. That's my big bro. Like, that's legit my big bro. When I'm in town, we're going to go have a steak dinner. I'm going to call him out on that shit. Say, bro, Lebby's offense, your offense, whatever the case may be, right? Game scenario situations, run the fucking football.
Yeah.
We're in the fourth quarter. It's second and whatever it is at that point. And it's just a different dynamic to be in the fourth quarter down 13 versus it's still the third quarter and we scored a touchdown and now we're down six. Let's go play ball. It just feels different. So that really, you know what I'm saying? And I said it before the fumble happened and then I saw it happen and I'm like, damn. You know, I was like, I wonder if that's a fumble or a pick. I'm glad they got it right because to me it looked like a fumble and I didn't want Jackson to get the negative kind of connotation in his mind because he made a perfect pass again. That Farouk, right, gave up the goodies. But I feel good, Barry. I feel good. The SEC is what it is. Auburn got their ass kicked. Missouri played an Ohio State team that just looked like they didn't want anything and didn't have a QB. Missouri didn't impress me. That's for damn sure. Obviously, Georgia kicked the dog snot out of Florida State, but that's Georgia. We'll see what Bama has to offer. I think Bama's going to be our Nebraska. That's the way I look at Bama. Like, we had to play Nebraska every year. Those guys were going to come ready prepared. Nebraska respected OU. OU respected Nebraska. There was really no beef except for the fact that greatness against greatness. When we play Bama, okay, cool. They dope. Y'all came to Norman and got your asses whooped in 03. Don't forget, or 02. Don't forget it. Y'all came to Norman and got your – and then we went to Tuscaloosa and whooped your asses again. So it is what it is. O-line could be our downfall.
Got to figure out the offensive line. Because moving over to the defense, just to kind of touch on, you know, some of the bones and position groups of that, you saw – talent that really was showcased and your RMTs. PJ had a few good plays in this game. There was one that where they run a little stunt and I can't remember who the tackle is, but man, they get home. PJ looks extremely long. He's looking a little bit more comfortable in the system. But RMT on a couple plays really finally for the first time this year, in my opinion, looked explosive. At that weak side edge spot, so many times you can win the play by just getting a good jump on the ball and being more explosive and quicker to the spot than that tackle is. And in RMT's case, he's had a season where, hampered by injuries, he's not been able to get his feet underneath him in that respect. In this game, there were times where he absolutely dominated, looked a lot bigger, but you see the talent coming up the ranks. And one of the things I want to touch on is, you know, BV's now really two, three recruiting cycles in. this next year, I think you're going to start seeing where the development actually is on the defensive side of the ball. All of these players have either been transfer portal guys, true freshmen who are ready but not ready, or guys who have been in the system like a Bowman and a Woody, and you Stutzman, who obviously improved a ton, but you know who these guys are. Right now, you've had an entire 2 years, essentially two off seasons, to develop some guys who maybe weren't as ballyhooed, right? Your Marcus Strongs, your Ashton Sanders, who are sitting over on the bench, they're going to be playing late next year. Also mixed in with some of the high-level Jaden Jacksons, your Stones, your Okoyes, who I think may end up seeing the field next year too if he shows up and looks as explosive as he has leading up to now. But defensively, D-Mac, you look at the safety position, touched on the linebacker position. What needs to happen so that that number four was just all over the field catching balls, and I don't think there was a whole lot in some cases that they could do. What position do you think is the biggest threat to maybe hamper them going into next year? Is it still defensive end? Did some of the freshmen coming in this signing class, which we really never talked about, but obviously we've hit on some points. Do you think there is a glaring weakness, or do you feel that it's been kind of a linear progression up until this point?
So I'm going to tell a story, and this story is going to help my position. When we were at OU, BV and Mike were co-D coordinators. Okay. Both, by the way, 99 and 2000. What immediately comes to mind is 2000 against A&M and 99 versus Texas. Both of those games come to mind. By the way, we won one, we lost one. 99 against Texas, we give up the lead. And then, of course, 2000 against A&M, we find a way to win. But here's what I vividly remember. In those scenarios, okay, I'm going to ask you a question with it. In those scenarios, third and medium. It's third and six, it's third and seven, you know, whatever. We got two D coordinators, and sometimes they're both on the field even in some scenarios. Mm. But they are, you know, they're in the headsets, and Bob is too. Bob can hear everything. He's got both channels, offense and defense. And man, you literally, like, we literally, Barry, there would be yelling matches. And I'm not trying to, like, give up Sooner business. I think it's well documented, right? Like, the coaches, when we were with our years, they were young men. They were in their mid, late 20s or early 30s, all of them.
Fire.
And the bullets are flying, like, legit, right? Yeah. Texas and A&M, bullets are flying. Okay. One coach is vehemently like, God dang it, we need to play man coverage. Let's put pressure on the quarterback. Da 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 da. The other coach is saying, no, we need to confuse him pre-snap. We need to show one thing and jump into another, and we need to have more eyes on the football. Take a guess. Just the coordinators. Which coordinator wanted man across with more than they could block and make him make a quick decision? And then which was the other that wanted to confuse them pre-snap and then jump into something different? Just take a guess.
BV was the latter. Am I right?
So look, every Tuesday, Wednesday practice, we had one-on-ones. We had one-on-ones, right? And look, by the time 2000 season, it was a thing.
Okay.
By the way, it was such a thing that, like, Spurrier would be like, if you get D'd up too many times, you ain't playing. Like, for us, we're in meetings and we're watching film, and it's like, yo, Mackie, if D Straight or Roy Lee or who, somebody, Mike T, I would go against Ante. It got to a point by the time 2000 came, Ante couldn't guard us. Ante's like a backer. He's just in a DB body. He didn't have the feet or the hips. He couldn't guard us. So Ante, we couldn't even go against Ante. By the way, that's no diss to OJ. OJ was a dog. He was great in zone, but just 1v1. Receiver, D1 receiver versus a nickel or a slot safety, he couldn't guard us more often than not. If he didn't get his hands on us, forget about it. So it's really Mike T, D Straight, Roy Lee, like JT Thatcher, he never came down. We would beat the snot out of JT. JT couldn't guard us, right? It's really those three. So Coach Spurrier is like, look, if those three guys shut y'all down, like, you sit in the bench. Right. So imagine you in a Tuesday, Wednesday practice. Like, that's the level. That was the standard when I was at OU. Like, that's what it was. By the way, one-on-ones are fake. It's 5 seconds. There's no rush. There's, you know what I'm saying? So Mike Stoops would get pissed because sometimes somebody would give a little extra wiggle. Okay, but here's my point. We get to one-on-ones and you'd hear every single time, you'd hear Mike Stoops say, "Brown coverage." And we would, or man brown, and we would all look at each other and be like, "What the fudge?" But colors meant man. Colors meant man, right? And so we'd get to game day, and you know, we split the 50 offense on the north side, defense on the south side, or whatever, however our stadium is, whatever. we'd hear Mike Stoops in the headset. He'd be saying one or two things. He'd be saying blue or brown. Blue, 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 blue. And then you could hear whatever, like BV saying his thing. And then you could hear Bob hands crossed. Like, "Nah, this time we're going to do five, you know, cross dogs." "Nah." And then it'll be other times where Bob be like, "Hell yeah, hell yeah. Blue double cross, blue double cross." And my point is, philosophically, you hit the nail on the head. Mike Stoops wanted to run man and put the defense in a position where there's no – pre-snap easy reads, and we're bringing heat. So here's the second half of that piece. We play Texas. They've got Kwame Cavill. Mike wins that call. They call a outside screen. We run man. We have a man blitz. Two guys block the corner. The tackle leads up on the safety. If you go watch the play, it's the game that puts the game away. Kwame Cavill run. They run some kind of slip screen to the outside receiver. They score untouched. Like, we're not even in the ballpark. We blitz everybody out of the play. They double team the corner. Tackle leads up on the safety. The kid high steps into the end zone, right? That's the play that makes the determination on OU Texas. And then we play A&M. And by the way, Robert Ferguson is kicking our ass. In my opinion, 2000 season, Robert Ferguson was the best receiver in America. He played so amazing that day. So amazing. And then we played for the national championship. He like transfers to NC State or something. I don't know what the hell happened the next year. And he's playing for NC State or whoever the hell he was playing for. And he killed them too. I mean, he was killing. Like, the kid was killing, right? But anyway, same scenario happens on the T. Marshall interceptions. They're arguing. Are we going man? Mm-hmm. Are we going zone? BV wants to go zone, bring some type of blitz or show some type of blitz. Mike wants to go man pre-snap. And of course, we go zone that play. And of course, T. Marshall undercuts the end cut, boom, intercepts it, pick six to the house. So what's my point? I think philosophically, well, I know BV likes to play zone. He likes to have a ton of people with eyes on the football. What I have seen happen the past 2 years, though, Barry, is our DBs and backers, for the most part, are not savvy enough to really understand route combos and find and sink into the proper window. We get our asses handed to us. We like consistently Kansas, I mean, preseason, the KUs of the world, and of course, the big dogs of the world, they give us problems. I believe philosophically that we need to trust our DBs. I think we have good enough talent at corner now to just take away the pre-snap stuff. Hey, dude, I've got you man v man QB. I'm not hiding it. I'm either taking away the slant or I'm taking away the fade, or I'm such a dog, I'm playing you head up and you got to win either. I ain't giving you nothing pre-snap. And we've got to start eliminating that pre-snap comfort for quarterbacks. Against Arizona, if we jump out of zone and jump back into man, because we've got our guys on defense. But Connie Walker follows four. Woody is opposite that. We've got Bowen, we've got Dolby, I mean, and all the puppies in tow. I believe if we put 26 on four, of course, Gentry's in and then he's hurt. He got hurt. I don't know what happened to him, right? He's in street clothes the second half. But we've got good enough. We've recruited well enough in the secondary to play more man and put defenses in a position where they can't just out-scheme us on third down. Go watch LSU. And I know this is a bad year to bring the LSU comparison up, but for 20 years, LSU says on third down, we're running man. Our D-line is better than your O-line, and we might bring one more. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. And our two safeties are deep pre-snap, so we're not giving you the fade. You can't just throw it over the top. Beat us. It's a hard pill to swallow. It's very, very, very difficult to just feel like you're going to win. Hey, DBs, reroute, get them off their timing, right? So the quarterback can't just say 1, 2, 3 spot. You can't do that because the receiver's getting touched in those first 5 yards. To me, that's where we've got to go. Because if you go position groups, right? D tackle, I think, like, you can't recruit as well as we recruited. We could have gotten a couple guys. McClellan maybe is a guy at Missouri. Obviously, Williams is a guy who is a, we think was a silent commit. Money took him to Missouri. So theoretically, we could get, but you can't. Nigel Smith, David Stone, and the other kid who's a freaking hoss. Is his name Jacoby?
Jaden Jackson. That,
man, just dogs, right? You can't recruit.
He might play the most in his freshman year more than any of them.
100%.
In my opinion.
And then you got two seniors coming back. You got two guys who played college football for years coming back. And then you got Strong. You got Sanders. You got Grayson. So those are guys, program guys. They've been in the program 2, 3 years. D end. Again, same thing goes, right? You got RMT coming back. You got Downs probably coming back. I mean, I think Downs is coming back. You've got PJ coming back. Like, you've got dudes. You got the kid you love that we recruited, right? The DN, I forget his name. I believe it's out of Kansas City. Oh, my God. He couldn't block the kid. Backer, we don't need to talk about. Safety, Billy Bowman's coming back, which, by the way, I've said this all year, Barry. I think I've been pretty consistent. He looks better than he plays.
I think Sooner Nation finally came to grips with that a little bit in this one, and I had some people reaching, just DMing, commenting on the Twitter, saying, you know, I didn't realize how many snaps OU was susceptible to throws where you're throwing where Billy Bowman's supposed to be, and either his back is turned, he's not aware. There was a lot of that, a ton, all year long.
We love Billy. He's a D1. He's a starter caliber player, but, like, he's not at this level of, like, he's a Sooner great or even like this regime. To me.
Yeah.
To me.
Like, is he better than a Brodney Poole or a
hell no. Don't even bring him and Brodney.
A Nick Harris. I'm trying to think of guys who were kind of in that vein.
Different players. But Javon Harris was a safety who was solid. I mean, we've had a ton of guys who were solid. He's made some opportune plays for pick sixes, and he deserves the accolades because of the numbers. But, like, he's not a leader who's a difference maker when it matters. He just hasn't done it yet. He hasn't done it yet. Like, he doesn't deserve to be discussed in conversations with, like, Brodney. Are you kidding me? Like, he doesn't deserve to be discussed in conversations with, like, Ace Colvin. And Ace moved to corner, but Ace was a – Ace was a guy who made big plays when they matter. Billy's made splash plays and tip balls. He's jumping on them. He's a ball hawk. I don't hate that, but, like, Billy's a guy who gets beat too often in the routine. In the routine, Billy gets beat quite a bit. Granted, he's got another year. My point is, safety position is a position we can check. Safety looks good. Peyton Bowen's coming back. Billy's coming back. We got the younger McCullough in the two. We got guys, okay? I like our Mason Jennings. Man, we got guys. For me, Barry, the biggest thing is, will OU say, hey, against inferior talent especially, we're going to lock up man. We're going to put pressure on your quarterback, and we're going to make him make a play and not allow an offensive coordinator to design a play. That's what the big boys do when it matters. And I think those are areas where we could have taken more advantage of that this season. But philosophically, BV's the guy who says, let's confuse the quarterback pre-snap and jump in the zone. And Mike was the guy who says, let's show them hard man pre-snap and see if they can beat us.
Interesting. Yeah, I think this offseason is going to be incredibly fascinating. I think this is one of the more interesting spring games, right? The first two have been interesting just because, you know, you got BV bringing in new guys. It's new blood. It's new life. This is an offseason where, with all of the guys showing up to enroll early, I think it is going to be very compelling to see who is playing at what positions on defense and maybe even on offense in to some respects when the spring game rolls around. Which true freshmen or which younger guys who have been in the system for a year, red-shirted, kind of in the cupboard, who start seeing more snaps with the ones and with the twos? This is the type of, you're now 3 years in, this is where depth needs to start getting built. And to me, that makes the spring game incredibly compelling. I'm going to be doing some separate content on guys who I think need to have big winters and big springs. And then, of course, summer getting right before the season. I'm going to talk a little bit about the guys who, you know, physically need to grow still, probably need to get a little bit faster. You know, we talked to Makari Vickers last year. I think he's interesting, especially with the interview we did with OU bringing in some other guys at corner, developing a guy like Jacoby. You got a Wagner, you got a Gentry. Does a Makari grow into a little bit bigger body? And do you start looking at him at a safety spot? Does he, you know, maybe come in there as a cheetah who can really cover, right? He's a guy who's not going to be taken advantage of in a lot of one-on-one scenarios just by how he moves. He was an elite prospect when OU got him. I think that will be a very interesting the trajectory to watch with him. But man, before we get out of here today, two things. First, that Nick Anderson touchdown. Beautiful play. Beautiful throw. But I'll be daggum, what me and D-Mac predicted the first start of the year, we put a stake bet on it. I had Drake Stoops leading the team in touchdown receptions. You had Nick Anderson. They end in a dead ass tie, gridlocked, 10 apiece. But of course, I'm going to take credit because the bowl game doesn't count. So I'm just playing. 10 touchdowns for Nick.
That's not the rules we said.
10 touchdowns for Nick, 10 for Drake. Nick Anderson coming back next season. I think he's a guy who really has a chance to do something, barring any injury. But man, this college football playoff, you got Texas going up against Washington. You got Alabama playing Michigan. You know, we didn't talk about it a ton, but when they showed Michigan and the playoff committee, when they do the announcements and you watch the video of the Michigan players and you see all the teams excited about where they're going, about where they're going to be seated, and you see the Michigan team when they announced that they were going to be playing Alabama, it was not a lot of exuberance. So going into this, you got these games on tomorrow. I think Texas is the first game. Alabama, Michigan might be the second. Can't remember how that order is going to go. Who do you think wins these semifinals, and who do you have taking the natty? I'll actually go first on this. I think Washington is going to show why they were able to handle Oregon like they did. Washington is going to surprise some teams on the defensive side of the ball. They got some guys on the defensive line who can really play. They got a corner, I cannot remember his name, who can really play. They got an outside linebacker who can really play. I know Blake Mullen, who, shout out to Blake, being hired by OU Insider. Super big move for Blake. Super proud of him, man. The Lord's got him, and he is on an amazing trajectory for his career. So big shout out to Blake Mullen. Y'all go show him some love over there on X. I think Washington gets by Texas. I think Alabama gets by Michigan. I think this just feels like the kind of year where Alabama they sleepwalk through the early part of the year. They pick up steam down the stretch. And when you give Saban a long time to prepare, this feels like a perfect Saban type season where they don't come out of nowhere, but they kind of rested at that 6, 7, 8 spot, move up in that last week after beating Georgia. And I think Alabama ultimately gets it done against Washington. And Saban can hopefully ride on into the sunset pretty soon to open the door for some other folks. Because, man, he has just built a monster over there. How do you see this thing shaking out, D-Mac?
First things first, I owe you a steak. I haven't forgotten. When we finally get together, bro, the entire night is on me. So just be mindful of that.
All right.
I've got Washington beating Texas. I'm biased. I want them to beat Texas. I will be cheering for you, Dub. So there's that. But I also think the matchups work in Washington's favor. This is a quarterback driven. This is a quarterback driven league, and Pettis is just better than Ewers. And so, however, Ewers when he's on can make things happen. I think Texas's biggest opportunity is along the defensive line. However, Washington just won the Moore Award, so there's that. But listen, in a world where everybody talks about Texas's receivers, Washington's are better. In a world where everybody talks about Texas's quarterback, Washington's is better. I think Washington's biggest issue is going to be on the second level. Their backers have to be able to control the run, because if they don't, they have shown consistently all year, especially against Oregon in that first game, where those guys will get lost and you'll be able to sneak tight ends. And the kid at Texas, they got a, you know, the kid at Texas is a really good player. If they don't stop the run, Texas is going to be able to play action that ass, and they're going to beat them on the second level. The third level, it's going to be pretty even. Both teams are solid on a second level, but I don't think either secondary is something where you're thinking about a ton of NFL home cooking. I like Pettis being able to make a key play when it matters. I like the opportunistic ability of the UW defense. I think they'll bend but not break. And I think Ewers throws the ball to the defense one time and Texas loses. So I'll take UW. On the other side of the coin, believe it or not, I'm taking Michigan, and here's why. So first things first, Alabama does not have a difference maker at running back, which is very,
that's
very
true.
Far and few in between. And Michigan will be pinning their ears to make sure Milroe doesn't beat them with his legs. Michigan secondary is legit. They're legit. And when you think about Bama's receivers this year, they don't have a Judy or a Waddle. They don't have a Deontay Smith, who's at the Eagles this year. They've got guys who are great route runners and good athletes, but they don't have like a difference maker just run by everybody. What's the kid's name that played for the Raiders? He was the fastest one. I forgot his name, but he's out
Ruggs,
the league because he hits somebody.
Ruggs,
oh my
man.
God. Like, they don't have a Ruggs. They don't have that guy. They've got 5'11 to 6'2 guys who are 4'4 and are good players, but Michigan's got good DBs. And Michigan can run the football. So
that's true.
I believe, and here's the biggest thing. This is the biggest issue Michigan's had the last 3 years when they were making it playoff pushes. Their quarterback was a liability when you forced him to beat you. The kid they've got this year, I forget his name because I ain't in Michigan. You know, I don't pay attention to Michigan like that. Kid can run. He can beat you with his legs. He can beat you with his arm. He can beat you with his mind. Can you believe they got him as like a second round pick or something? Which I don't see that, but I guess his potential is high. His ceiling is high.
Yeah, he moves his feet really well. He's got a good arm.
He's a 4.5. He runs a 4.5. I said, what? He runs a 4.5? I forgot the kid's name, but he's a stud. Well, he's not a stud, but he has the ability to beat you in multiple ways, which means they'll have to scheme him different. I've got Michigan and Washington, which is a classic Pac-10 versus Big Ten Rose Bowl.
That's a Rose Bowl matchup, man.
Yeah, for my teenage years, Michigan and UW were both big-time programs back then. I'd like to see UW win it. I'm kind of partial to UW. One of my buddies coached there a long time. Actually, he coaches at Oregon now, which I'm like, man, you ain't my dog no more. When he was coaching at UW, loved him. He's a receiver coach. Mm-hmm. Now he's a receiver coach at Oregon, and I don't like Oregon so much, but I think I would like to see UW win. I think Michigan probably wins. If you made me bet money, I'd say Michigan finds a way to beat Bama, and Michigan beats UW in a game where their defense suffocates the UW offense, and then UW does not have an answer to the Michigan run game.
Man, I do not want to see Texas win it for a lot of reasons. One, because they're Texas, but two, the recruiting advantage in different scenarios is going to be when TCU did it, that was cute. That was a great year by TCU, but they went out to the Natty and just got run by Georgia. Man, before we get out of here, did you hear Kirby Smart's comments after the Georgia game?
No, what is that?
Basically talked about the bowl season And of course, I'm sure he's happy his team went out there and performed well, but I'm going to paraphrase, but the gist of it was he said that that was one of the worst bowl games he had ever seen, been a part of, just because of the amount of players who portaled out and basically made the game worthless, right? Georgia wins the game. I think Georgia still wins even if FSU is healthy, right? But obviously, if Jordan Travis is playing,
it probably is a lot closer.
I'm talking about, for the most part, healthy. I still think Georgia probably wins, especially if it was a playoff scenario. It's just so hard to bet against Kirby Smart when he has time to prepare. I think he was a big key cog in why Bama had so much success for as long as they did. And now you see him doing it at Georgia.
Invincible. They were invincible when they had Kirby. They've been beatable since he's left to Georgia, for sure.
100%. So, but his comments were interesting. You know, before we get out of here, you know, next season you got the 12-team playoff. You know, teams that are 9-3, 10-2 are going to have a shot. It's going to make more games more interesting next year. And we'll dive into what our predictions for that will be next season, you know, as the offseason rolls around. But how is something like this for you as a former college athlete, where back then the bowl season was your cap on a good year, right? Everybody was playing. You know, maybe you had a few things, like you might have had a dismissal, right? That plagued OU a couple times, guys getting in trouble in the bowl season. But now the culture of opting out has become so prevalent, and it's not even that I disagree with it. For the player, it is the right move to get an extra – well, when you're trying to cut weight, maybe for the combine, to get an extra two-week jump on that, three-week jump is massive, right? That's the difference in you running a 4.4 or 4.55 and you running a 4.47, right? It can be – a huge, huge difference in the amount of time that you prepare and can cost you a lot of money. So I don't disagree with it. But how do you, as college football, as the NCAA, make the bowl season compelling again beyond obviously going to 12? Like, well, what do you do to make it interesting and make the players want to stay in the game and compete?
Listen, B, I haven't watched three games this season. I didn't remember OU's game until the night of. Someone at work was like, "Hey, OU plays tonight." I have a girl in my office who played with. She ran track when I was at OU, and she's like, "Hey, the game's tonight." I was like, "Oh yeah, the game's tonight." Like, I haven't watched two games. I watched all of our game. The 12-team playoff is you know, the first thing it is karma. We would have had it this year if not for the ACC.
Yeah,
dumbasses. And Florida State would have had a chance to win or lose on the field. So there's that. I'm excited about the 12-team playoff. I'm excited about first-round home games. Think about how exciting even the NFL and the NBA. The NFL is closer to how I remember it being a kid. It is. But the NBA is trash. Like, I don't even watch the Lakers play. I might watch 10 games a year. I watch all of the playoffs. NBA playoffs, I freaking love it, right? Because everybody's 100%. Playing. They've got to go play. I haven't watched 10 Laker games this year, and I'm also not a LeBron fan, so there's that. But I believe the season between I don't know if it's the BCS or the plus one. The plus one seemed pretty legit. You know, the plus one seemed pretty legit, but like I can't remember the last time I gave a damn about college football games in the bowl season. It's probably been 8 years. And it's gotten worse with the portal. It's gotten worse when – what's the kid, the running back from LSU, who's now a journeyman? He played for Tampa for 4 or 5 years. He was the first guy.
Fournette
was the next AD, yeah. Right? He was the first guy who I remember opting out in a game. Like, I figured, screw that. I'm going to get ready for the combine. And since that, it kind of opened the floodgates. I believe the 12-team playoff is going to make bowl games like literally just like they might as well just call them exhibitions. right? Like the OU game, I could care less whether we won or lost. We already got to 10 wins. Check. The puppy's playing the entire game, so I wanted to see what he could do. I didn't care whether we won or lost. And no major injuries, I'm good. We lost to Arizona. Damn it, I wish we would have won, but I literally had no emotion attached. Like, literally. Yeah.
It's not even your team you've watched the whole season. That's right. Not – oh, that's not the 2023 version of Oklahoma.
Right. In fact, Dylan's probably already in Eugene. Like, I need to call my boy. I'm like, hey, bro, is Dylan there? He's probably already – or maybe he's at their bowl game with a jumpsuit on. Who knows, right? So, like, by the way, to me, Dylan's not a long-term Sooner great. He's not. Salute to what you did. But damn it, you – like, I played my last game as a Sooner and was concussed. I'm a Sooner. I get it. And I don't have hate for Dylan, and I don't think he's a bad kid, and I appreciate what he did. He got us a big win versus Texas, and he helped right the ship. But, like, I'm not dropping the standard of Sooner great. I'm not dropping the standard of what it means to be a true Sooner because the times have changed. He could have said, I'm going to come back in the fall, and I'm going to make you guys make Jackson Arnold transfer, or we're going to win a championship because of me. Kid took the money. Kid took the opportunity to guarantee his position, and I don't hate him. I'm not a hater. I'm super grateful for Dylan, but he's not a Sooner great for me. I don't care. Like, to me, the standard is the standard. We don't drop the standard. We don't water down the standard. We don't hate people making rational decisions because Jackson's a better player. We've also said that since August. Me, you and I have said that since August, and a bunch of people were like, oh, you guys are crazy. No, we're not crazy. You know, this thing played out about where it should have played out. College football, I think, made a good decision. Barry, mark my words. In the next decade, it'll be bigger than 12. They're going to see how much money that 12-team playoff makes. They're going to say, wait a minute, the NFL does 16. I think the NFL does 18 teams now, right? I think it's top seven now, right? You get the top seed and then three wild card games the first week. I wouldn't be surprised if 16 – and or potentially, maybe not 18, but I wouldn't be surprised if they land on 16 and it's 2 weeks of home games and it's all this. It's a different regime of prestige. And I think it's good for the sport. If kids are going to get paid, if we're going to monetize everything, why not give teams the opportunity to lose some games and see if people say Georgia is one of the best four teams in college football this year. Then damn it, Georgia should have got a chance to play. But I don't care what no one says. In its current makeup, there's no rational, legit way in my eyes a school like Florida State, who played in the conference they plays in and beat everybody on their schedule and won a conference championship, you can't say because a kid got hurt. Could you imagine the NFL saying, hey, Brady got hurt. I don't give a damn how good the Patriots are. Y'all not going to the playoffs. Like, to me, that is mind-blowing. So I take the Georgia loss with a grain of salt. I wouldn't want to play in that game. If I had aspirations of playing in the NFL, or if another program was going to pay me $100,000 to go in that, to that school, why would I play in a game that's an exhibition where we're not playing for any type of championship and I have NFL aspirations and or monetary aspirations for my family? What, they have 25 opt-outs? I would have opted out.
A ton. But Florida State was decimated. Yeah. I think not going to the playoff at 13-0. And while I think there were four teams on a neutral field better than them in a sense of like getting it right, they did still deserve to be there. But the way the makeup of the whole thing is crazy. And the fact that if you really go back and think about it, the fact that they started with four anyways, when you have five power conferences, was just wild to me, because you're going to leave out somebody any given year who probably is a top team. So I think 12 does make it a lot better. There's a press conference that Leach did. I want to say he was at Wazoo back in the day, and it was might have been like right before the playoffs started. Maybe it was like 13. And his point was, if you're going to do a playoff, just do it right. Make it 16 teams, 24, whatever number you land on. and allow things to play out on the field and make it interesting for every fan base. Because right now, it's not interesting. Even the OU game, to circle back, that you're not watching the team you watched all year. There's nothing to really play for. It is slightly more entertaining than a spring game, and that's only because the other team has a different uniform on. But at the end of the day, it's not, and it's not even necessarily good football now, because now you're bringing in a ton of new players who haven't played all year, trying to get them up to snuff for the bowl game. It's so difficult to do. Because I think this year's rendition of OU, fully healthy, with Guyton playing, I think that probably makes a little bit of a difference in the game, just because of how OU was able to get worked on that side of the O-line. It's just a matchup that you now tilt in your favor. So just something to think about. D-Mac, any closing words for Sooner Nation as we get out of here, man, and we end the 2023 campaign of the Barry and Mac show?
Two seasons in, super grateful for you guys. We're looking to do big things in 2024. We've gotten closer to some normalcy, and we've made the transition to Dallas, loving it. Looking forward to being in Norman in 2024. Thank you guys for everything. We are absolutely looking to improve and get better. Lots of opportunities knocking on our doors, and every decision I think we're going to make is going to be decisions that are decided based upon how they impact our relationships with our listeners. And also I would say, Barry, specifically for you, bro, it's been a challenging time, not challenging in the sense of hard, but challenging in tons of transition. I always look forward to jumping on with you and having these conversations. You know what I'm saying? It makes it easy to want to do it when you like the people you work with. And so, guys, just be safe tonight. Enjoy yourselves. Don't beat yourselves up over how many interceptions Jackson threw, or, you know what I'm saying, how we lost to Arizona in a game, which was a huge program changer for them and was just a ho-hum game for us. Pay close attention to what happens to the program the next 6 or 7 months as we prepare for 2024. And listen, let's be unapologetic about kicking ass in the SEC. I don't give it. The SEC I remember was whatever. They weren't a dominating conference. We can go into the SEC year one and make some noise and let those mother suckers know to respect the DNA of OU, because there's only one. So appreciate you guys. Appreciate you, Barry. Stay safe tonight, guys. Have a happy new year.
Beautiful stuff. As always, go check out the X at Barry and Mac SHW. Find DMAC at D_Mac13. And find me at BWISE Fitness at letter B, WISE Fitness. And Instagram, Damien is Dame That Dude. Follow me at BWISE Fitness. If you are in Tulsa on January 6th, I am doing a fundraising event for AutismOklahoma.org. We're doing deadlift for autism. Got some championship power lifters coming out here, record holders, a few of mine that hold some state records.
What day of the week is that?
Saturday. This next Saturday.
That might be a dinner date. I might come out there and show some support. Can I get a BWISE Fitness t-shirt?
Brother, I got you. I'll hit you up with the hoodie and the t-shirt, brother.
Okay. I'm going to put it on 80%. Let me get my wife's permission. Opportunity to get together and do something good.
Yeah, man. We're trying to make a difference. We're just showcasing that everybody can pick up a barbell. Doesn't matter. Everybody can work to better themselves. What fitness, and this is kind of not to take it back to Oklahoma, but like what fitness does for you in terms of improving your life, showing you how to execute with discipline, showing you how to be consistent. It teaches you so many things. I've never, ever in my life worked with somebody or talked with somebody where they got on a consistent fitness regimen. They had some success. I've never heard somebody say, man, when I did it, I didn't get any good stuff out of it. I didn't learn anything. You always learn something about yourself. It is self. It is to me the most bare bones, like rawest way to teach yourself discipline, consistency, and how to put yourself first. And I think, and that should not be limited to anybody, no matter your race, color, gender, whatever you're facing, whatever obstacle, everybody can better themselves in that regard. And that's what the whole weekend is going to be about. I got one of my lifters coming up here who is autistic power lifter, but state record holder in the state of Oklahoma in the deadlift total and bench, blew away the bench record. And then this year he's looking to hit 405 as a 17-year-old, looking to get after it. So that's the goal for 2024. A lot of big goals, you know, not to belabor, but as D-Max said, this year was a crazy transition year. So thank you guys for bearing with us. Sooner Nation, it has been awesome. It has been good. Have a blessed, happy new year. Cannot wait for 2024. We will see you soon.